Saturday Night Theatre. The French Prisoner, a play for radio by Brian Gear, based on the Westcotts by Sir Arthur Quiller Couch, with Rennie Ascherson as Dorothea Westcote. The French Prisoner.
This is a simple, old-fashioned story. It is set in England in the early years of the 19th century, the time of the Napoleonic Wars. To much of the country, the politics and the gunfire seemed a long way away. The reality wasn't brought home to Exeter, a small town in Somerset, until wheat rose to 184 shillings a quarter and a woman dropped dead of starvation in the marketplace. To put things to rights, the whole town at once looked to the Westcotts of Bayfield House, and to Major Endymion Westcott in particular. Nor did they look in vain. It was Endymion Westcott who ensured Exeter's return to prosperity by arranging for a number of French prisoners to be billeted there. A small enough matter for a man with Endymion's influence, but of great consequence for Exeter, and perhaps of greater consequence for the Westcotts themselves. One fine morning in December, they rode the mile into Exeter from Bayfield House. Endymion and his brother Narcissus were on their way to the townhouse where they conducted their banking business. Their sister Dorothea, who took a great interest in the welfare of the prisoners, intended to pay a surprise visit to the Orange Room. This was a large, rather barren apartment in the Dog's Inn, which the Frenchmen were decorating for Exeter's winter ball. A very free system of parole operated for the prisoners and was beginning to lead to certain problems.
Oh, and another thing, Narcissus.
Mm-hmm.
I've just found out where my pippins have been going.
Your pippins? I'd no idea they'd been going anywhere.
I've been missing them since October. You know what it is? Those dashed French prisoners.
You don't mean to say the French are in the habit of climbing the hedge into our orchard?
The temptation must be very great, seeing all those apples just out of reach.
Well, I hope you'll issue a reprimand, Endymion. You've quite alarmed me.
Nonsense. I shall do nothing.
Nothing?
How do you know it was the prisoners? Might it not have been the town boys?
I'll tell you how I know. Mudge brought me a board this morning.
A board?
He said he found it nailed to one of the trees. Had something written on it in French. Well, that's not likely to be the town boys, how is it?
What did it say?
It said, Restaurant pour les aspirants. Well, how do you like that for nerve? Restaurant for the hopeful climbers, eh?
Shocking. Quite shocking. I don't see how you can take it so lightly, Endymion.
Because I understand them, Narcissus. They're flamboyant. They're, well, I will ignore it. That's the way to deal with it. Well, here we are at the Dogs. Now, look alive there, Narcissus. Ring for the ostler. There's a good fellow.
At once, brother, at once.
This is what I like. An early start to the day. It will still want a few minutes of 10 when we've walked to the townhouse.
Why, isn't that General Rochambeau?
By Jove, so it is. Rochambeau?
Good morning, gentlemen. Miss Westcott.
Good morning, General. A pleasant one for the time of year, is it not?
A trifle cold, perhaps, in our quarters. But what is that when it brings such roses to the face of your charming sister?
Now, where the devil is that fellow? Ring again, Narcissus.
Oh, yes.
And what errand brings Miss Westcott to Exeter this morning? I cannot believe that you have come to inspect bonds and ledgers and bills of exchange.
I thought I should like to see the preparations in the Orange Room.
Ah, then perhaps you would permit me to escort you.
That is very kind of you, General.
Morning, Mr. Nibbimum, Mr. Narcissus.
At last. Morning. We have been kept quite 5 minutes here, you know.
Oh, I'm sorry about that, sir. Or were that short-handed with purpose?
Yes. We'll just take Miss Westcott's horse with Jasper and Hunter, will you?
Yes.
I shall want him again in about half an hour, Rogers.
Very good, Miss Dorothy. Oh, yeah, my beauty.
Well, then, my dear, be off with you and inspect the decorations. I entrust my sister to you, General, the more confidently because I know you cannot take her far, eh? Come, Narcissus. After I've run through my letters, Dorothy, I'll step down and join you for a moment.
A good day to you, General.
Good day, Monsieur.
I must say, Narcissus, I'm quite looking forward to seeing what they make.
If you will permit me to give you my arm, Miss Westcott. You have not seen the Orange Room since the decorations began?
General, you must forgive my brother. I'm sorry he spoke as he did just now.
Then he is more than forgiven.
He did not stop to consider.
Your brother is an excellent fellow, Miss Dorothea, and not a bit more popular than he deserves to be. I could name a thousand acts of his kindness to us prisoners. And I'm thinking not of us privileged ones, but of our poorer brothers. And acts, Mr. Arthur, speak louder than words. Now, I must warn you, we are in a horrible mess and smell most potently of turpentine. By the way, did you know we have a genius at work on the painting?
My brother Narcissus tells me the designs are extraordinarily clever.
You will allow they are more than clever, I am sure. I discovered the artist myself.
One of those poorer brothers?
Not entirely. He has rich relatives, but for some reason or other, they decline to support him. And yet he seems a gentleman. Well, what do you think of our transformation, eh?
Why, the ceiling seems to be alive with cupids and doves. My head is quite in a whirl looking at it all. And the vines and the roses growing up the trellises on the walls. Really, one would think one was in...
a sunnier climate than Exeter. But then I said the artist was a genius, did I not?
And the panels. All these classical subjects.
But there he is. You must allow me to present him. He will amuse you. Raoul!
Oui, mon général?
This is Mr. Raoul, creator of all you see around you.
The lady from Bayfield House.
You know Miss Westcott already?
Only from afar, General. I must apologize for the state of the room, Miss Westcott. The General has sprung a trick on me bringing you so soon. I had not expected visitors before Wednesday.
If you will excuse me, Miss Westcott, I will take the opportunity to inspect the anterooms.
By all means, General.
I shall not be long.
I am ashamed you should find such confusion.
Do not give it a moment's thought, Monsieur Raoul.
But you are a critic, Miss Westcott. And especially of classical subjects. I have heard of your drawings for your brother's book on the Roman pavement at Bayfield House.
Indeed, I am no artist. And please do not talk of those drawings. They were meant only as diagrams to help the reader.
Oh.
But these are beautiful. Quite beautiful.
You are very kind, Miss Westcott. But allow me to draw your attention to some points which might otherwise escape you. Here, you see, we have Daphne pursued by Apollo.
And what is the next panel?
That shows Perseus entering the garden of Hesperides. There is the dragon laden coiled about the foot of the tree and blinking a lazy eye at the three maidens dancing beneath the golden fruit.
But it's beautiful, Monsieur Raoul. Quite beautiful.
It's kind of you to say so, Miss Westcott. But if you are frank, you will admit that it wants something.
I'm sure, sir, I could not guess. Even if I possessed sufficient...
A board, for example, against the tree, so?
A board?
And written upon it, Restaurant pour les aspirants. It was kind of you to say nothing. You held my fate in your hands when you saw me the other evening. There is a certain penalty if we are caught out of bounds.
Monsieur Raoul,
I declare. A paradise. A perfect paradise. Is not that your opinion, Dorothea?
Entirely, Endymion. Allow me to present Monsieur Raoul, whose handiwork it all is.
Indeed. Well, sir, you have your revenge of us in the art.
Monsieur le Commissaire.
I did not expect, Monsieur le Commissaire, you would honor us so soon with your presence.
Ah, Rochambeau, I was just congratulating the creator of this little paradise. Splendid, quite splendid.
If you are pleased, and if Miss Westcott is pleased, then I can speak for all of us when I say we are amply rewarded.
No, we must do something for these poor fellows who've been working so hard with the decorations.
No.
Oh, it'd be our gratitude, General. A stall, now, at the end of the room, under the gallery, with one or two salesmen whom you must recommend to me. The prices, I dare say, will not be too closely considered.
Sir, I beg of you.
Eh?
They have given their labor, such as it is, in pure gratitude for the kindness shown to them by the people of Axester. I can assure you, we do
say
not...
No more, General, my mind is made up. Now then, what have we here? Bless my soul. Bacchus and Ariadne, if I'm not mistaken. We have at Bayfield House, Monsieur Raoul, a Roman pavement entirely depicting the exploits of Bacchus. My brother has, in fact, written a book on the subject.
Yes, I was just telling Miss Wiscott I have heard of it.
Have you, by George? Narcissus will be pleased. Yes, well, one of these days I must give you a permit to visit Bayfield and see the payment for yourself. Small recompense, you understand.
It will more than repay me,
sir. Oh, not at all, not at all. You must jog my memory. Well, now, what else have we? My grandmother was a Frenchwoman, Monsieur Royal. That gives me a certain sympathy, shall we say. Moreover, I know what I like. Now then, this one. Ah, yes, splendid. Quite splendid.
Exeter's December ball was an important event in South Somerset. It ushered in not only the domestic Christmas festivities, but the public ones, which began with the new year and culminated in the great county balls at Taunton and Bath. Thin, powdery snow began to fall as the Bayfield barouche rolled through the gates into the high road, and Narcissus, who considered himself a weather prophet, announced that it would be of short duration. Unless the weather grew worse, they would all drive back after the ball. But the old caretaker in the townhouse had orders to light fires and make the bedrooms ready. Dorothea was looking her best that night, in an old maidish way, of course. She wore a gown of ashen grey muslin and a sash of a flame-coloured ribbon that had taken her fancy at Bath in the autumn. Perhaps it was this striking yet tasteful costume that attracted the eye of the young French painter.
Miss Wiscott is not dancing tonight?
Oh, excuse me. I had not expected to see you, Monsieur Rao.
Ah, but they have given the scene painter a free ticket, and I assume it carries permission to dance, as long as I do not display in an unseemly manner the patch in the rear of my best tunic.
I'm sure a uniform looks none the worse for having seen a moderate amount of service.
Always so kind, Miss Wiscott. But I interrupted your thoughts, did I not?
I was wondering why General Rochambeau had not yet come to speak with me.
Come, Miss Wiscott, do you know the air? I understand we are to dance Britannia's triumph to it. So, let your captive lead you. Why, Miss Wiscott, if there is a better dancer in the Orange Room tonight, she must be a veritable Guimard.
Monsieur Rao, do you think flattery will make amends for your indiscretion?
In asking you to dance?
That is not what I meant, as you know very well.
Upon my honor, I can think of nothing I have done.
Then think of your panel of the Garden of the Hesperides. Perseus has changed his face since last I saw it. He now wears yours.
Oh, and is a little vanity and indiscretion?
It is, when one of your nymphs is now wearing a certain brooch. Just such a brooch as had pinned the collar of my close habit when we talked here the other day.
How observant you are. I should have realized you would have noticed my little act of gratitude.
Gratitude?
For a kind word to a man in exile. How else may I show my appreciation?
Come, Monsieur Raoul, I am sufficiently familiar with gratitude to understand the ways in which one may show one's appreciation.
Miss Wiscott, I humbly beg your pardon. At the very first opportunity, I shall erase the brooch. But do not let such a little thing spoil our dance.
Indeed, I shall not, Monsieur Rao. I shall not. But what of your poorer comrades? Do they suffer much these winters?
Sometimes they die. Though your brother does his best to prevent it. It promises to be a hard season.
I wish I could help in some way. But Endymion... But my brother does not approve of ladies mixing themselves up in these matters.
Yet he has carried off half a dozen to the supper room where three of my comrades are selling knick-knacks at a side table.
Is it that which has annoyed General Rochambeau?
It is.
Would he rather they suffered? They do not all have the resources at home to buy them little extra comforts, necessities even.
There are certain things that even such a heart as yours may not understand.
Ah, Monsieur Raoul, I've been looking at you. My brother is interested in your panel of Bacchus and Ariadne.
I would be privileged indeed if I could discuss it with you, Monsieur Raoul. I have a very special interest in the subject, you understand?
Willingly, sir, if Miss Wiscott will excuse me.
But of course.
I have been down to the door and it's snowing viciously. I hope, Monsieur Raoul, you've brought a great coat.
Well, Monsieur le Commissaire, we come to you in something of a hurry. We do not always have time to collect a wardrobe against all eventualities.
Of course. Wait a moment now. There are half a dozen old chair covers behind the cloakroom door. Don't hesitate to take one. You can return it tomorrow or the next day.
Rest assured, sir, I will turn up my coat collar. Now, Mr. Narcissus, you are waiting to see my panel, though I fear your learning will discover a host of mistakes.
Indeed, I am too taken with your skill to be inclined to play the peasant.
I shan't consider returning to Bayfield tonight if this snow keeps on. Yes, it's as well you brought Polly, my dear.
Pray don't talk of the end of the evening just yet, Endymion. I am enjoying myself as never before.
Oh, miss, you woke up. I was trying to be quiet.
Oh, I'm sure it's time I was awake, Polly. Oh, it's cold in here.
Yes, I'll soon have this fire going.
Have they sent for Mudge?
Oh, Lord, no, miss. Small chance of getting to Mudge or Mudge getting to us. Why, the snow's halfway up the front door.
It's quite an adventure.
It was a pretty adventure for the gentry at the ball last night. My Sam's just looked in for a cup of something hot. He says a score of them couldn't get beds last night for love or money. So they kept it up till 4 in the morning. And now they're all sleeping the sleep of the dead round the fire in the orange room.
They were caught like this 18 years ago. I remember, because it was my second ball. But then there were no prisoners filling up the lodgings, so everyone found a room.
Oh, but some of the French gentlemen gave up their lodgings last night. They're down at the Dogs now, keeping themselves warm.
Indeed. Did Sam say who?
There was that young one, miss, that did all the painting.
Monsieur Raoul?
Well, I'm sure I don't know his name, miss, but at all events, it seems he was the gayest of the lot. He carried old Mrs. Kekiewicz home, pick her back through the snow and got wet to the waist. And then when he got back, one of the young ladies was speaking of some new dance she'd seen at Bath, I think it was. Well, it seems that this Monsieur, what's his name? He'd seen it too in his travels, and nothing to do but they must dance it together. A valse, they called it, Sam says, or some such name. But such a dance, miss, Sam says. Roll and roll, round and round, roll and roll.
Roll?
Oh, upright, miss. Upright.
I should have thought Corporal Zeeley had better things to do than pass on tittle-tattle like that. And you to listen to it.
Yes, miss.
What time did Mr. Endymion come in?
Oh, about one, I think it was, or a quarter past. But he was up again at six. He's gone out with Mr. Narcissus to see the roll called and get the prisoners to clear in the streets. There now. That'll be a nice blaze in a minute.
Thank you, Polly.
Tired, miss?
Well, yes, Polly, a little. But not uncomfortably. I danced several times last night.
Did you, miss? Oh, I beg your pardon, miss, but, well, 'tis not often you dance.
No, Polly, it's not.
Well, I hope Miss will tell me all about it later on, but Mrs. Morris is downstairs now declaring she don't know what to find for breakfast, and she never will till I find it for her.
All right, Polly, I'll dress myself this morning.
Very good, miss.
You'll have some tea, won't you, Narcissus? The pot's quite fresh.
Oh, if you please, my dear. Oh, it's nipping outside.
And how are the roads, Endymion?
Not so bad beyond the bridge. That's the worst spot. I've sent down a gang of volunteers and prisoners to clear it. I think most of the guests should be able to depart before noon.
It seems to be quite a treat for them. The prisoners, I mean. They were throwing snowballs in the street below my window.
Snowballs?
Yes. Is there anything wrong in that?
I think you've touched Endymion rather on the raw, Dorothea.
Indeed, how?
After I saw you and Narcissus into the barouche to bring you here to the townhouse last night, a snowball struck me in the back of the neck.
Endymion, are you sure?
Positive.
I mean, are you sure it was a snowball? Might it not have been a lump of snow falling off a ledge?
No, it might not. Moreover, I have a fair idea who might have thrown it. Hmm? Although, of course, by the time I had turned, there was no one to be seen. I refer to our artistic friend.
Oh, really, Endymion?
To Monsieur Raoul.
Well, who else merits that description?
Oh, I am sure Endymion, Monsieur Raoul, is not at all.
I think you will allow, my dear, that I am of necessity the better judge of men. And I can assert quite emphatically that, in my opinion, he is just the sort.
Might I trouble you for the butter, Endymion?
What?
The butter.
Yes, yes.
Oh, thank you.
Well, you have no proof, Endymion, as you did not see who it was. And I hope you won't let mere suspicion prevent you from giving your consideration to a little plan I'd like to submit for your approval.
Plan? What plan?
If you will but hear me out, you will learn what plan. General Rochambeau and Monsieur Rao...
are doubtless prepared to teach me my business.
Now, Endymion, for whom would you, would these poor men have worked as they did upon the Orange Room, and all to show their gratitude?
Well, Narcissus, if you have finished with the butter. Thank you.
It appears that the worst part of captivity is its tedium and the way it oppresses the mind. They dread Sundays most of all. And I said I would speak to you, and that if a way could be found...
My dear Dorothea, I have not often to request you to mind your own affairs, but really, when it comes to making a promise in my name...
Not a promise.
May I ask if you seriously propose to familiarize Axester with all the orgies of a continental Sabbath? Already the prisoners spend Sundays in playing chess, draughts, cards and dominoes... practices which I connive at, only insisting that they are kept out of sight, but from which I endeavor to wean them by encouraging them to take part in our church services.
But I have heard you regret, dear, that only the least respectable do so. The rest, being strict Roman Catholics, think it wrong.
Dorothea, are you quite sure that last night did not overtire you?
Overtire me? Not at all.
Well, you are certainly disposed to be argumentative this morning.
I think you might at least listen to what Dorothea has to say, Endymion.
Well, since she has evidently been committing me to her projects, I suppose I had better just hear what they are.
I haven't committed you. I only said I would ask your advice. I thought that if perhaps you extended their walks on Sundays, and I did wonder if once in a way we might entertain them at Bayfield.
What?
Late in the afternoon when you finished your nap. Narcissus might show them the pavement and tell them about Vespasian. And in the evening, they might meet in the Orange Room for some sacred music. It need not be called a concert.
I envy your simplicity, my dear soul, in believing that the alleged ennui of these men can be cured by a talk about Vespasian. But when you go on to speak of sacred music... I must remind you that a concert is nonetheless a concert for being called by another name. I can scarcely even term it the thin end of the wedge, so clearly can I see it paving the way for other questionable indulgences. I don't doubt your good intentions, Dorothea, but you cannot, as a woman, be expected to understand how easily the best intentions may convert Axester into a veritable hotbed of vice.
Very well, Endymion.
And by the by, you might tell Morris I shall want the horse again in half an hour.
Yes, Endymion, I'll do so at once.
Obliged, I'm sure.
Hot bed of fiddlesticks.
I beg your pardon, Narcissus. Are you going to be disagreeable now?
Well, you needn't have snapped Dorothea's head off. I thought her suggestions extremely sensible.
Oh, did you? Including the concert, no doubt.
Yes. You don't make sacred music any the less sacred by calling it a concert. Moreover, I really don't see why, as intelligent men, they should not find Vespasian interesting. His career, in many respects, resembles the Corsican's.
Yeah. Well, we will talk about it later on, Narcissus, yes, indeed.
And you still got the butter.
Little now remains for me to tell you, except that the great hall, and where we are at this moment, was built over the hollow square about which the old Roman villa had once stood. In place of the colonnaded walk, we have the deep galleries on two stories in which some of you are now standing. Notice how a ray of wintry sunshine burnishes this unique pavement, investing it with all its former splendor, so that the intervening centuries seem to have dimmed it hardly at all. Thank you, gentlemen, for your kind attention.
He will be served in the library, gentlemen. He will now be served in the library if you'll kindly step this way.
Will you remember your promise, monsieur, and allow me to examine the pavement a little more closely?
But of course, monsieur. Pray, take your time.
Merci. But it's a wonderful thing. That Pontheus and Aminad carrying the torn limb.
I see it strikes a chord of sympathy in you.
I come from the Provence, And my mother's family boasts descent from the Roman colonists.
Oh, then our pavement must seem a poor trifle after your forum and amphitheatre.
Not at all, monsieur. The house would be remarkable anywhere. But I don't see how those southern settlers managed to endure the climate.
The trees, my dear sir, the trees. I have not the slightest doubt that our Bayfield elms are the ragged survivors of an immense forest. Given this forest, we must infer a climate totally unlike ours of the present day. Damper, perhaps, but far, far milder. Within his belt of trees, the colonist would plant a garden to rival your gardens of the south.
Yes. And perhaps a plant of helichrys or a rose cutting from Paestum to twine about the house pillars and comfort his exile.
Narcissus.
Yes, my dear?
How very naughty of you.
What have I done?
Monsieur Raoul has had no tea.
Oh.
It was thoughtless of you to detain him.
We were talking, Miss Westcott, of the things which brighten exile.
I was hoping to show Monsieur Raoul over the site while it is still light enough. He has such a genuine interest and knowledge. I'm sure he would appreciate it.
Very well, Narcissus, if it is Monsieur Raoul's wish.
Then come with me, sir. And now suppose we take the triclinium first. That will tell you whether I'm right or wrong about the climate of those days. A summer parlor facing the north and with no trace of heating goods.
Monsieur Raoul was not among the long train which shook hands with Dorothea just before sunset and filed down the avenue at the heels of General Rochambeau. Narcissus was at that moment engaging Raoul's services to illustrate a new edition of his monograph on the Bayfield pavement. 20 minutes after the others had gone, Dorothea happened to look out of her boudoir window and see Monsieur Raoul striding off into the dusk. Then she decided to examine the hall herself, to make sure the couches were in position and the cushions shaken up so that Endymion could find no cause for complaint.
Excuse me, miss.
Yes, Polly, what is it?
Well, one of the servants has just found this book, miss. Seems to belong to one of the French gentlemen.
Perhaps there's a name on the flyleaf. Why, it belongs to Monsieur Rao. Polly, be a dear and run down to the little gate with it. If you go the short way, you'll overtake him easily. I've seen him leaving just this minute.
Yes, miss, right away.
With my compliments, Polly.
Yes, miss. Hey there, just a minute.
Hello, is it highway robbery? If so, I surrender.
Oh, would you be Monsieur Raoul?
I would. And you would be Miss Dorothea's maid, would you not?
That's right, sir. You left this book behind, and my mistress sent it after you with her compliments.
Thank you for your trouble, Polly. You haven't been reading it, I hope.
No. Is it wicked?
That depends on where you happen to open it. Now, if your sweetheart were to...
Who told you I had one?
A girl like you without a sweetheart? The very idea. What's his name?
Well, you must know, I'm walking out with Corporal Zeely.
Zeely? But I know him. A stoutish fellow. A worthy member of the Axis de Volunteers.
What are you doing to that book?
I want your mistress to read it, but there are one or two passages she might not entirely approve of.
Oh.
I think it would be easier if I perched on top of the gate. Perhaps you would be so kind as to put up an arm to prevent me from overbalancing.
Indeed, I shouldn't dream of it.
Oh, very well. Now then, I particularly want her to read Monsieur Rousseau's reflections on the Pont du Gard, but I don't seem to have a bookmarker, unless you would allow me to use a lock of your hair.
Are you the gentleman she danced with the night of the snowstorm?
The Pont du Gard, my dear, is a Roman antiquity and has nothing to do with dancing. Well, since you won't give me that lock of hair, I must use a piece of braid from my coat. There. Now, if you would kindly draw your mistress's attention to the passage I have marked.
I'm sure I'll do my best.
Oh, you wretch.
Have you hurt yourself?
Not at all. Like a cat, I land on my feet.
Well, serves you right if you land on your head.
Hello? Hello, here comes one of the volunteers to see why I haven't answered my name.
What?
I do believe... Yes, it's Corporal Zeely. Good evening, Corporal Zilly. We're both of us a little behind our time this evening.
Oh, dang my living buttons. Couldn't even wait till me back was turned, but he must kiss the maid under me nose. That's a funny thing, though. Come to think on it, it looked a bit like Polly. It sounded like Polly, too. Oh, dang, this dimpsy old light. I got a good mind to run after and ask who it was. Oh, I don't. I go and ask Polly.
Polly's answer was short and to the point. But it would take more than the tongue of a woman to daunt a corporal of the Exeter Volunteers. Sam appeared satisfied and decided to keep a close eye on the situation, just in case. The first days of spring made their appearance. One sunny morning, Dorothea was in the coffee room at the Dogs, expecting the mail coach. The prisoners were in the town, too, waiting for the commissary to receive and distribute their letters.
You must allow me, Miss Westcott, to congratulate you.
Congratulate me, General? Whatever for?
Why, here is winter nearly past, and thanks to your subscription lists and working parties, my poorer brothers have never gone so well-fed and warmly clad in access.
General, you embarrass me. It is the very least I could do. Good gracious! What is that commotion? Surely not the mail coach already.
I think, Miss Westcott, you had better stay here while I see what is the cause of it. If you will excuse me.
Of course. I do hope nothing is wrong.
Very well, sir. Perhaps this will teach you to flaunt your petty victory in front of a Frenchman.
If you wish to make a fight of it, Frenchie, then here's the King George.
Then we shall see which is the best of us.
Roll. Is this how you keep your parole?
And who the devil are you, sir?
General Henri Rochambeau, monsieur. A prisoner of your king. And responsible for the conduct of my countryman here.
What, another Frenchie? Where the devil's all the Englishmen?
Allen, young man. What seems to be the trouble, eh? What a bother with one of our prisoners.
I'm afraid Monsieur Rowe's patriotism has got the better of his manners, Mr. Westcott. I apologize for his disgraceful behavior.
You expect me to stand by and do nothing, General? For too long, I have forgotten. I am a man and not a child.
That is enough.
Well, now then, sir. I am the commissary in charge of the prisoners here. Just you tell me what happened, would you?
Well, I'm on my way to London. Got some dispatches from Plymouth. And when I saw the crowd in the market here, I thought I'd let them know we'd just taken another French vessel. So I started waving this flag and gave a few huzzas. And then this madman leapt on the chase and brought it to a halt.
I see, yes. Well now, young fellow, no one is more pleased than I to hear of another victory for King George. But you see, we have a large number of French prisoners billeted here. It's rather unfortunate you should have chosen this particular spot to, make much of it.
Oh, well, in that case, here I say, Frenchie, what's your name? Shake hands and beg pardon, eh?
I would sooner die.
Roll! You will shake hands with the young gentleman.
Very well, General. As it is your command. Here, sir. My hand.
And mine. No hard feelings, natural mistake, what?
And now, Monsieur Roy, I think you had better go into the coffee room of the Dogs and spend a little while in regaining your senses.
General.
No, Mr. Westcott, let's
not another word, General. Entirely understandable, natural mistake. Think no more of it. And you, young fellow, may I offer you any hospitality before you proceed?
No, thank you, sir. My dispatches are urgent. If you will not think it a discourtesy...
Of course. And Godspeed, sir.
Thank you, sir. Driver!
Get up there. Come on.
Monsieur Raoul.
Mr. Westcott, I did not expect...
I saw what happened.
If I have any regret, it is that I might have lowered myself in your estimation. It seems I was over-hasty.
And that the young officer was over-jubilant.
While I trifle away my time here, my country needs my services. While I paint pictures for English gentry, my countrymen are dying on land and sea. Forgive me, Miss Westcott. This is no concern of yours.
And yet I almost feel as if it were.
Miss Westcott, for that word of understanding, for that sip of water in a parched desert.
Monsieur Raoul.
Dorothea. My love. My love.
It was very soon after this that Monsieur Raoul came to Bayfield to begin the new drawings for Narcissus's book. Narcissus had been delighted to find that Raoul knew something of lithography, which was then a new process and quite beyond Narcissus. Dorothea had promised to help by taking measurements, and there were many to take, for Narcissus wanted each of the tesselae drawn accurately and to scale. Eventually, he delivered himself of his last instructions and left them alone in the great hall.
Dorothea, give me your hand.
Oh, please, no. Monsieur Raoul.
Charles, please.
Oh, very well. Charles, then. I have something most important to say.
But first, a kiss.
No, no. You must listen to me. You know even better than I that this relationship of ours is quite impossible.
Why impossible?
I am old and you are a boy. It can lead nowhere. And since we see this so clearly, there can be no treachery to my brothers in letting our love stand where it does. I know this must be hard for you. At your age, one is less easily contented than at mine. But it must be so.
Dorothea, I cannot bear you talking like this.
I don't like it myself, but it's got to be done. Now, in the first place, there must be no kissing.
But, Dorothea, if you love me...
We shall be much alone together, Charles, while you are doing these drawings, for no one would suspect that a woman of my age and a young man...
Then they would be blind and foolish.
However that may be, we must not take advantage of it. If our prospects were what people call happier, why, then you might kiss me. But you would be bound to go to my brothers and tell them. And since it can all come to nothing...
This war cannot last forever.
It would make no difference if it ended tomorrow. Except that then I should lose you. Oh, forgive me. That was selfish.
Dorothea, you are adorable. Oh, but you play beautifully.
Now, you must not flatter me, Charles. If there's one thing I'm rather vain about, it is my music.
But so you should be. You play with such elegance, such sensitivity. I wonder I've not heard it spoken of.
Oh, but I play only for myself.
Never for your guests or your brothers?
Oh, no, never. I don't suppose Narcissus remembers I can play. And Endymion never does more than inquire occasionally how I progress. He never puts my skill to the test.
What dolts they are, these brothers of yours.
Charles.
I cannot be silent. There is the one, so pompous with his importance and vain of his figure. Oh, yes, I've seen him admiring himself in the glass when he thinks no one is looking.
Charles, really?
And the other with his head buried in the sand, or the tesselae, I should say. What fools these Englishmen are. They think that if a woman does not look like a piece of porcelain, she is of no account.
I think you are unjust, Charles. You should not expect my brothers to think of me as they do other women. I am their sister. Their half-sister, at least.
Really? I did not know.
My father's first wife died shortly after Narcissus was born. Some 4 years after that, my father created the only scandal in the family history. He married the daughter of a wholesale glover. No one could forgive him, for she was good-looking into the bargain. However, she died within 12 months of the marriage.
And you are her child?
Yes. But I'm afraid I resemble my father. He died when I was 12. That is why people laugh at me, I'm sure.
I beg your pardon. Why should they?
I mean, but my childhood was lonely. I had no female friend or relative on whom to model myself. I have given it a lot of thought. I believe that is why I am so awkward today.
But you are not awkward. You are sincere, you are good, you are honest. How can you be awkward?
Charles, you are prejudiced. You love me. But others who do not love me, they see only an aging spinster who has no way with her and who throws babies into screaming fits when she chucks them under the chin.
Have you never wanted babies of your own?
I suppose I have had a vague sentiment that it would be delightful to have one of my own that would not scream. But in spite of that, I have no regrets. There are many whose lot is far, far worse.
What harder fate can there be than never to know love, never to have children?
To be poor, to be without material comforts, to lack even the basic necessities. I have seen this among the poor people round about, and I know my own fate, and I know, too, which is the more bearable.
And so you are content to spend your days here at Bayfield, looking after your brothers and your garden.
Visitors always praise my garden. Come, Charles, we must go downstairs into the library. I have a higher opinion than you of my brother's powers of observation, of Endymion's at least. And I am sure you would not think a musical recital was good enough reason for your presence in my woodland.
Good morning, Mr. Rowell.
Good morning, my dear. I welcome any errand that brings you to me. Is it to deliver that note you have in your hand?
I'm sure one errand is much the same as another to me. The note is for you, yes.
Then let me see it.
Oh, Lord, you have got away with pen and ink and no mistake. I never come across anyone that could draw like this.
Mr. Narcissus has an eye for detail, to be sure, but I think he sometimes underestimates my intelligence. Thank you, Polly. I now have my instructions for the day.
Were you always a great one for drawing?
Oh, it came to me easily, yes. Perhaps one day I might be allowed to sketch your pretty face, my dear.
Oh, well, I'm sure I'd have to think about that. Corporal Zilly might not like it.
Corporal Zilly need not know about it. Mm-hmm. Surely there is somewhere where one could spend an hour or so undisturbed, a barn or outhouse.
Oh, that very idea. I shouldn't dream of such a thing.
Oh, well, never mind. Now I come to think about it, there is a young woman down at the dogs who has a very pretty face. Perhaps I can practice my art on her.
Besides, Miss Dorothea would wonder where I was.
Even half an hour would be enough for a quick sketch.
Well, there'd be no harm in just half an hour, would there?
Polly, haven't you anything you should be doing?
Oh, yes, miss. I was just going. I've been delivering a note to Mr. Rowell, from Mr. Narcissus.
My dear, how charming you look this morning.
What was she saying to you?
Polly, I forget, something of no consequence.
I didn't think her attitude seemed quite respectful.
I suppose that class of person cannot be bothered to show respect to a prisoner. Really, Dorothea, your brother must take me for an idiot. Look at this note, he said.
I am most displeased, Polly. And I shall speak to Zee if anything of this kind happens again.
Oh, miss, please don't do that. Please, miss. He'd go wild, he would. And 'twas not what it seemed, miss. I promise you, miss.
Very well. I'll overlook it on this occasion. But remember, if Mr. Endymion is to let you and Zee have a house when you marry, and taking one or two of the prisoners as lodgers, he'll want to know that you treat them respectfully.
I'm sure I meant no harm. Mr. Rowell is... He's that way that you can't help but be...
Be what?
Well, I don't know, miss. Friendly, I suppose.
What has Monsieur Rowell said or done to make you think he is friendly?
Oh, nothing, miss. It's just his way. Well, you know what I mean, miss.
Indeed, I do not.
Well, you've been so much alone with him.
Oh, Polly, you are very close to being insolent. I shall definitely have a word with Mr. Endymion.
Oh, miss, please don't do that. You know my Sam and me are counting on that cottage. I really didn't mean no harm, I promise, miss.
Polly, you're a good girl, and I'm very fond of you, but you must not meddle in what does not concern you.
I really don't know what that could be, miss.
Well, I mean, you should show as much respect to Monsieur Rowell as you would to me. What? In his own country, he is a gentleman, and while he is here making the drawings for Mr. Narcissus, I want you to treat him as a gentleman.
Oh, yes, miss. I'm sure I shall, as I've tried to all along, miss. I really don't know how I come to give offence in the first place.
There, Polly, dry your eyes and go on brushing my hair. Oh. We'll say no more about it.
Thank you, miss.
April, May went by. They were into June. And still Dorothea lived in her dream, troubled only by dread of the day which would bring the drawings to completion. At last it arrived.
Time, 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 it eats us all. How I hate it. How I hate the grave.
You talk of the grave, a mere boy.
But that is why. That is the torture of this captivity, to feel my best days, my best years, slipping by. Oh, but you wouldn't understand, not even you. You wouldn't understand how a man feels.
Yes. Yes, I think I do. After all, I am something of a captive myself.
Of course, I did not mean to be selfish.
You at least have the consolation that one day you will walk out of your prison. But you are still so young that next week seems like next year. So I can begin to understand and make allowances.
Allowances?
Your Monsieur Rousseau has helped me to understand you. Not that it was the pleasantest of lessons to learn.
Come, Dorothea, we must get back to work. This beautiful weather makes me forget the reason I'm allowed your company.
Charles?
Yes?
Charles, if you were... If there was... someone you were seeing.
My dear, what are you trying to say?
Oh, dear. This is very difficult.
You are always so straight. That's what you say, isn't it? Straight?
What I mean is... But I could understand there being someone else. After all, I am not a great beauty. Or even pretty, in the ordinary sort of way.
Someone else? A woman, you mean? A woman? But that's absurd. I love you. I love only you.
I'm not talking about love. I'm not as innocent as you suppose, Charles. I can understand that a young man... that you may need more than... But I could not stand to be deceived.
Dorothea, such violence from you.
I'm serious, Charles. Is there anyone else?
Dorothea.
Is there?
No one. No one.
Forgive me. Yes, we must indeed get on with our work. It is your last day, and we've nearly finished.
Then we must not waste any more time.
Charles.
Yes?
You must find a way to come and see me sometimes, Charles.
Of course. Of course.
Goodness gracious me. Time to retire, I think.
Good night, Endymion.
Good night, my dear. I think I shall just finish reading this dispatch upon the campaign.
Now see that you don't strain your eyes. Mm-hmm. Or you, Narcissus. Narcissus.
Hmm? Yes, my dear, what is it?
Narcissus, haven't you finished checking those drawings yet?
Well, it's only a week since you gave me the last of them. I have to make sure they are correct before I send them to the printers, especially with this new process of lithography.
Has Monsieur Raoul done his work well?
Oh, indeed. They come up to my highest expectations, I assure you.
Speaking for myself, of course, I cannot help feeling a certain gratitude at having Bayfield entirely restored to ourselves again.
Why, Endymion, you cannot say Monsieur Raoul troubled you with his presence. You scarcely saw him.
True, but let us say I do not share that high regard which you and Narcissus seem to have for him.
But why not, pray? You admired his paintings in the orange room?
Ah, that is one thing, my dear, that is art. But the man... may be quite another matter.
It's not a scrap of use trying to persuade him, Dorothea. Endymion is unshakably convinced that it was Raoul who threw that snowball at him.
Now, Narcissus...
There's not a shred of evidence, but you try telling him. Aren't I right, Endymion?
I will not be drawn into what you are evidently disposed to let become an acrimonious discussion, Narcissus. And since, moreover, you have made me lose the thread of what I was reading, I shall bid you both good night. And, Narcissus, pray don't be too long before you go to bed. It's gone 10 as it is.
You'll see that the lamps are out, won't you, Narcissus?
Yes, certainly. Good night.
Good night, Narcissus.
Well, I don't know, I'm sure. I'd have to see about that, wouldn't I?
Polly? Oh, yes. Oh,
will you take me a turn? I didn't hear you.
Who is under the window? To whom were you speaking?
Oh,
I would...
Answer me, girl. You were talking to someone outside. Who is it?
Monsieur Raoul, miss.
Monsieur Raoul?
Yes, miss. I was just drawing the blinds when he called to me. He wants to speak with you, miss.
With me?
Yes, yes, miss. Well, I'll go now, shall I?
You will not. You will stay here while I dismiss him. He must be out of his senses.
Yes, miss.
I suppose he's still there.
Oh, I expect so, miss. If you was to go to the window and call him.
What a predicament. I suppose there's no other course. Monsieur Raoul? There's no one there.
Well, try again, miss. I expect he's in the shadow somewhere.
Dorothea!
Charles!
Forgive me. Another night and no word from you. I could not bear it. See what I risk for you.
And have you thought what you make me risk by coming like this at such an hour? Nay, you shame me already. Polly is here.
Polly understands. She's a good girl. Give me your hand. If I stand on this little wall, I can just reach...
And what about your parole?
I can pass the sentries. Just let me have your hand. Just to touch your fingertips with mine. Please, Dorothea.
Very well. Then you must go.
Ah, my love. I knew you could not refuse.
Ah! Oh, they've shot him.
Oh, quiet, miss. What's happening out there? Oh, it's all quiet. Well, then...
Why have you shut the window?
They'll find quite enough without that.
But I must go to him.
I think you can leave that to the men, by the sound of things.
Marge! Marge! What the deuce? Marge!
I'll find him soon enough, never you fear.
Oh, my God, if he's dead.
No, no, get back to bed, Narcissus. This is no job for you. What the deuce is Marge? Marge!
Yes, sir.
You'll never find him down there. He'll roll down the bank. It's so dark.
Don't worry, miss. They'll find him, you'll see. Sam at the back door now. He'll tell him.
Sam?
Sam Seeley, miss.
Seeley? Oh, you wicked girl. It was a trap.
Is that what you think of me, miss?
Oh, Polly, forgive me. I don't know what to think. I can't.
Where, man? Where?
You're
here they are already, see?
It's so deuced dark around here.
It's so dark as
I'll go down the bank and have a look. You, come with me, Mudge.
Yes. I'll take the lantern, Mr. Westcott,
no,
sir.
No, man, you keep
Polly.
That
wait, miss. Oh, you keep the game away.
Polly, I want it clearly understood that there was nothing.
Aha!
A phone in, sir?
Now then. Who have we... Get out of the light, Mudge. Good God. Raoul.
Oh.
Where are you hit?
The leg.
Thank God.
You take his shoulders, Mudge.
Yes,
I'll manage it.
Steady,
Mudge. The wounded man. And Zilly, keep the juice lantern up.
Get the medicine chest, miss.
Oh, of course. Yes.
We'll take him to the kitchen. I shouldn't wonder. You get along there, miss. I'll get the lint and the bandages.
Oh, Polly, will you be all right?
Oh, you can still yell, that's for sure.
Now, careful, Mudge. You're in that corner. The new servants stand well back. Give us gangway now. Gangway.
Now then, let me see. Yes, you, best. Run for Dr. Ibbotson, will you?
Yes, miss.
Well, go along then. Don't just stand there.
Yes, miss.
Now, seat him on that chair by the fire.
Very good, sir.
Gently. And Hawkins, sir, make up the fire. We shall want a good blaze.
Yes, sir.
And one of you girls set on some kettles.
Ah, Dorothy. And you have the medicine chest.
Let me look at him. Fetch me a chair, Polly.
Here you are, miss.
Marge, I see the barouche is brought round.
Right away,
he
sir.
Must go to the infirmary as soon as we've done what we can for him.
Here are some towels, miss.
Thank you, Polly.
I have already unlaced the shoe and rolled down the stocking, Dorothea. And now, if I may leave the rest to you.
Spread a couple of towels over my lap, Polly.
Like this?
That's right. Now lift his leg, gently. Put his foot in my lap.
There we are.
Thank you, Polly. First, I must get this stocking right off.
Now, stand back there, stand back. You're in Miss Westcott's light. Please, stand back, like good people.
Are those kettles ready yet?
Oh, not quite, miss.
Well, pour me some warm water into a basin. I must clear away some of this blood before I can see what the damage is.
A flesh wound only, I think. Nothing too serious.
Thank you, Polly. Tear off a few strips of lint so that I can bathe the wound.
He looks very pale. A tot of brandy might set him up.
I think not, Endymion. He's not going to faint.
Oh.
Well, you know best in these matters, of course.
I don't think I'll bother him with questions just yet. Where's Zeely, though?
Right here, sir.
Zeely, you'd better step into my room and give me your account of this affair.
I see, sir. Before you examine Zeely, Monsieur le Commissaire, let me save you what trouble I can.
What?
I don't think I'll bother him with questions just yet. Where's Zeely, though?
Right here, sir.
Zeely, you'd better step into my room and give me your account of this affair.
I see, sir.
Before you examine Zeely, Monsieur le Commissaire, let me save you what trouble I can.
What? Now, are you fit to speak, Raoul? It's no desire of mine to force you before you are able.
I can speak, sir. I wish only to say this. I was trying to escape. Zeely was evidently in pursuit and challenged me as I cut across the park. I didn't answer. I jumped onto that low wall to the east of the house. I thought I could run down into the trench there and double back. But as I jumped for it, he fired. That's all there is to it.
Do you agree with that, Zeely?
Yes, sir.
You realize, Raoul, to what you've just committed yourself?
I realize that perfectly well, sir.
You're standing in my light, Endymion.
What? Oh, I beg your pardon. As I was saying, Raoul, I don't see what other interpretation the facts admit. But the matter is so extremely grave that it is my duty to warn
you. Spare yourself, sir. I have broken my parole. That is the end of the matter. Except for the consequences, which I am ready to suffer.
Well then, Zeely, there's a promotion for you in this night's work.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you.
Here, Endymion. I've mixed your brandy and water.
Ah, my dear, how thoughtful you are. The sight of human blood, an aversion I have never been able to conquer. Well, there he goes to the infirmary now. And in the morning, I must write my report on business. I was proud of you tonight, Dorothea. Very proud. Dr. Ibbotson spoke most highly to me of what you had done for Raoul before he arrived. You have the nursing instinct, my dear.
Any woman would have done as much.
Well, I must say I'm sorry for the fellow, though I never liked him. Now, why he should try to escape defeats me. He is not hardly treated, after all.
Perhaps we are not in the best position to understand the temptations.
Well, he's safe enough in hospital for a week, anyhow. And his friends, if they know what it means, will pray for that week to be prolonged.
What does it mean?
It means Dartmoor.
Ask not for myself, dear Lord, for you know that were he a free man tomorrow, it would make no difference to our position. No, I ask only for his sake, and only because there's nothing I can do. So save him, Lord, I beg you. He is not undeserving of your mercy. For the sake of my honor, which I thought for a moment had meant nothing to him, he has committed himself to this terrible fate. More terrible, perhaps, for him than for many another. What more can I say? I can think of nothing. And what I have said seems so very little. Save him, Lord, I beg you. Save him.
Excuse me, miss.
Yes, Polly, what is it?
Well, miss, it's like this, see? Now that Zeely's been made up to sergeant, him and me want to marry. And Parsons to cry the banns next Sunday.
And you want to leave me?
Well, yes, miss. Begging your pardon. I thought perhaps I could stay for a week or two after, if that'd help, to show whoever takes me place.
Of course you may leave, Polly. And I will speak to Mr. Endymion about your wages and that cottage you're to have.
Oh, thank you, miss. I'm sorry, though, that it should have happened like this. The way of Zeely getting promoted, I mean.
Let's not say anything more on that subject, Polly.
No, miss.
Have you... I suppose you have not by any chance heard how Monsieur Raoul is recovering.
Well, Zeely said yesterday either he was getting along very well. I wonder you haven't been to see him yourself, miss.
Oh, but Polly, I couldn't do that.
Oh, no, miss. I'm sorry.
They say, or at least Sam says, that he'll limp the rest of his days.
Limp?
Just a little bit, yes.
Polly?
Yes, miss?
I want to ask you something. I want you to help me.
Oh, I will if I can, miss. You know that.
This is not an easy thing to ask. It's about Monsieur Rao. Do you know what will happen to him?
Dartmoor, Sam says.
Polly, that is a terrible place.
Well, they say it's bad, but I can't believe it's as bad as all that.
I'm sure you wouldn't want Sam to go there, especially if he didn't deserve it.
Oh, where are you getting at, miss?
A prisoner is sent to Dartmoor only for very serious offences, like trying to escape. Now, we both know that Monsieur Rao wasn't trying to do that.
Oh, well, if he chooses to say he was, then I don't see what can be done about it.
At dinner this evening, Mr. Endymion told me the court-martial is tomorrow, so there is still time to save him, if we tell the truth.
We, miss?
It's wrong of him to expose us to the necessity.
It is that.
But I think we should overcome our fears in the interests of justice and humanity. It will not be easy, I know, but...
No, miss.
No? What, Polly?
No, I won't help you. I'm sorry, but there it is.
Polly, think how much more difficult it is for me to have to confess in front of my brothers that... I mean, to be placed in the position of having to turn away from my bedroom window at 10 at night, a French prisoner young enough to be my son who insists on speaking with me. It would expose me to ridicule and scandal in the whole town.
If they believed you. Forgive me, miss, but 'tis a time for plain speaking. If you was to tell them that, they'd laugh in your face. I mean, you said yourself he's young enough to be your son, and... Meaning no disrespect, miss. Why, you aren't the sort of woman to... I mean...
I know what you mean, Polly. But that is precisely why I need your help. If I am prepared to face the shame and the laughter, won't you at least confirm what I say so that people won't think I'm out of my mind as well?
I'm sorry, miss, but I don't think you thought of my position. In a couple of weeks, I should be a married woman. And a married woman's got a reputation to consider.
But it's my reputation that will suffer. It's me he wanted to see.
Will you try telling that to Sam Zealy?
You mean that he suspects you? He thinks Monsieur Rao was seeing you?
Miss, you said yourself no one would think he was there to see you. He was at the mistress's window, yes, but it was the maid he was looking for. Well, that's how Zealy sees it, and that's how the whole town would see it.
Oh, Polly... But if I told him...
That wouldn't do no good. Your kind art is known for miles round. What have you done for the prisoners already? Folks would only say you were sacrificing your good name to save the poor young man from Dartmoor. But they wouldn't believe you. Not for 5 seconds, they wouldn't.
So you won't help me?
But no, miss. I can't. It's not Sam I'm worried about. I can manage him all right. It's the town folk. I don't want to start my married life with that sort of thing hanging over me head now, do I?
No, Polly. Polly?
Yes, miss?
Since we're speaking frankly, we may as well have this out, too.
What, miss?
It's very foolish of me to think of it, no doubt. But are you sure Zealy may not be at least partly correct in his suspicions?
Are you trying to...
Hear me out, Polly, please. I have gone over that night often enough, God knows, in my mind. And one thing keeps nagging in my brain. When I came into this room, you were leaning out of the window speaking to Monsieur Rao.
Yes. I was telling him to go away and not be silly.
It didn't sound to me as though that was what you were saying.
Then, perhaps you'll be so good as to tell me just what I did say.
No, Polly, I can't do that, for I didn't hear the word.
Well, then you should be more careful, miss, before making accusations.
But I did hear the tone of your voice. I heard it very clearly, and I can recall it very well. It was exactly the tone of voice I had to reprimand you for using to Monsieur Rao once before.
And what tone of voice was that, pray?
I think I called it disrespectful at the time. But now I would call it familiar.
Well, miss, if you heard it familiar, then I dare say it was. But I don't see that it makes any difference to what you're asking me.
It makes this difference. If Monsieur Rao had come that night with the intention of seeing you and pretended that it was me he was looking for to spare my feelings... Then you have some responsibility for what happens to him.
Well, that may be your opinion, miss. But it's certainly not mine. And in any case, it was you he wanted to see. I'm sure I never gave him that much encouragement.
So Raoul was tried, condemned, and sentenced in the space of 2 hours. Then he was marched past the gates of Bayfield under escort for Dartmoor. and Dorothea had not intervened. How could she? Nearly 2 weeks of lying awake at night and scheming had produced only that impractical suggestion that Polly had poured cold water on. A few weeks later, Raoul's drawings of the pavement arrived back from the printer. Narcissus was aghast at the poorness of the impressions, and he didn't have the first idea how to put things right. He gave Dorothea no peace. Evening after evening, she had to pore over the proofs with him, while every line revived memories of Raoul.
But you and he spent hours together.
Over the drawings, yes. But he didn't explain the lithography.
He didn't?
No, there was no point. I understand nothing of printing at all.
Oh, how very vexing, how very, very vexing. I quite thought he'd be here to correct the proof, so I didn't give the matter any attention. Of course, if I could have foreseen... Oh, I'd give £50 to have the fellow back, if only for a 10 minutes talk.
Ah, Narcissus. Still hard at it over the drawings, I see.
They're a complete mess, Endymion. Look here, can't you get Raoul fetched out of Dartmoor to set us right?
What?
Well, come now. As commissary, you can surely manage a little thing like that.
My dear fellow, I shouldn't dream of it. It would be most improper.
Oh, I wish you weren't such a stickler for the proprieties, Endymion.
There would be no harm, would there, Endymion, in sending the drawings to Monsieur Raoul?
Oh, what an excellent idea, Dorothea. After all, the poor fellow owes us no grudge. I believe he'd be glad to do us this small service. Really, the printer has made such a mess of the stones.
It could all be done in due form through the commandant of the prison. It might well relieve the monotony of Monsieur Raoul's captivity.
Impossible. Quite out of the question. And I may say now, once and for all, that mention of that unhappy youth is repugnant to me. It is only by very good fortune that we escaped being compromised by him. And I have refrained from reminding you, Narcissus, that your patronage of him was indiscreet, to say the least.
Indiscreet? God bless my soul. You don't suggest, I hope, that I encouraged him to escape.
I suggest nothing. But I am honestly glad to be quit of him. I take some satisfaction in remembering that I detested the fellow from the first. I wasn't taken in by his airs for one moment.
Well, then, if you could see what was coming, why didn't you beg him to behave himself for my sake? He's absolutely indispensable as far as these drawings are concerned.
I sometimes feel, Narcissus, that your enthusiasm for antiquities blinds you to any other consideration whatsoever.
Endymion, will you or will you not have these proofs conveyed to that young fellow for his perusal?
No, I will not. And that, Narcissus, is my last word on the subject.
Oh, there are times, Endymion, when you are... You're utterly infuriating. If you were not my own brother, I would be very tempted to call you, well, a blockhead and a philistine.
Quite real.
And now I shall bid you good night, before I forget that you are my brother.
Narcissus, there is no need
good
to...
Good night, Endymion. Dorothea, would you be so kind as to return the drawings to their folder?
Of course, Narcissus. Good night.
Dear, dear, dear. It seems I've somewhat upset him. But where those drawings are concerned...
But Endymion, I'm bound to say it seems a great pity to spoil Narcissus' project when with a little arranging...
Now, I warn you, Dorothy, I shall not give way. For what Raoul has done, I would have had the old hulks maintained with all their severities. My one regret in the matter is that in Dartmoor he will have the consolation of herding with his betters.
Endymion, that is unjust. You have no right, no cause to hold him in such scorn.
No right, no cause. Did he not ingratiate himself first with you, then with Narcissus, until he was living here almost as one of the family? A privilege not even a gentleman such as General Rochambeau has been permitted. And then, spoiled, no doubt, by such petting, no sooner does he return to his proper quarters than he must attempt an escape. No, no, Dorothea, in this case I cannot help feeling that the punishment is particularly apt.
But Endymion, he did not commit the offence for which he was sentenced.
But his confession, Zeeley's statement, I assure you the court-martial was most thorough in its investigation.
The court-martial was hoodwinked.
Hoodwinked? Dorothea, what do you know about this matter?
Monsieur Raoul's confession was false. He made it to save...
Ah, I thought as much. I suspected something like this from the first, though I had no idea you knew anything of it. I thought I scented some low intrigue. Yes, Zeeley seemed uncommonly sharp-witted that night, and that was partly the reason I promoted him.
to give Polly the greatest possible encouragement to marry him and leave our service.
But it was not Polly.
Not Polly. Oh, Dorothea, what are you driving at?
Monsieur Raoul had come to see me that night.
To see you? Are you quite insane?
He wanted to speak with me. But just before I went into my bedroom, he'd attracted Polly's attention as she was drawing the blinds. When I went into the room, he was talking to her through the window.
Why so? You surely don't need me to point out what those two were up to.
No, Endymion. It was not that.
My dear woman, do exert some common sense. Now, what in the name of wonder could the fellow have to discuss with you at that hour? Really, there seem no limits to your innocence. Do you really expect me to believe he would break bounds to discuss watercolors or the exploits of Vespasian with a middle-aged lady?
And supposing that was what he had come for, what is there in it to deserve such scorn? Monsieur Raoul and I had many interests in common. Indeed, he showed more interest in my music in 2 short months than you have shown in the past 10 years. It is hardly surprising that Monsieur Raoul and I should have come to feel some regard for each other, and that having to return to his former routine, with no excuse for seeing me, he should feel the lack of our meetings and seek to...
No, Dorothy. Don't go on. Oh, no. It is too much. You. Oh, Lord help us. Oh, dear. Oh, I am sorry, Dorothy, but don't you see? The scoundrel has fooled you all along. It's as clear as daylight. He was after Polly. You were just his cat's paw.
No, that is an incredibly vulgar interpretation to put on the facts. I'm amazed at you, Endymion.
It may be vulgar, my dear, but it is true. Face it, I beg you, and conquer your illusions. My dear goodness. You, a woman of 38, or is it 39? And he a mere boy of 20.
I realize that this is how the world must see it. But the world would be wrong. He was always saying that there was no enemy worse than time. Now I see what he meant. Time sets a gulf between youth and age that not only forbids love, but derides it, as you have given me ample proof. A course amour with Polly. Oh, yes. You can understand that. Polly is young.
My dear, I did not realize. Well. So his confession was to spare your name. Well, that does put a different complexion on it, I must admit.
What can be done for him?
He can't possibly return to Axister.
I wasn't asking for myself.
No. I beg your pardon. Well, we must get him a cartel.
A cartel?
An exchange. Get him sent home to his friends in return for one of our fellows.
Can you do that?
My dear, it would be a poor thing for a man who's opened his purse to support a troop of yeomanry, to mention but one consideration, could not obtain some little favour from the War Office.
And does it take a long time?
It can't be arranged in a day, certainly, but never fear. I will write at once.
I ask because delays will prolong the punishment which you agree has not merited.
Yes. Yes, well, now, as it happens, I have some slight acquaintance with the commandant at Dartmoor. I shall write and say that I hope to arrange a cartel for this man and ask him to show every possible indulgence in the meantime. Although, of course, Raoul must not be informed of his possible release or who is obtaining it for him. Yes, and it would be as well if Narcissus knew nothing of this for the time being.
As you wish, Endymion.
Dorothea, I behaved very thoughtlessly just now. I ask your forgiveness.
You behaved only as Axister would behave, or Somerset, or the whole kingdom. What is there to forgive?
It was October before the cartel arrived. By the same post came one of the reports Endymion received on Raoul from the commandant of Dartmoor. Major Sotheby added a private note that Endymion read to Dorothea.
Suffering from such a severe attack of pleurisy that a couple of days ago I feared the exchange would come too late. But today the medical officer is hopeful that he will make a full recovery. He says he has no doubt another winter in this climate would be the end of him.
Oh, Endymion, I must go to him.
But what possible good can you do?
You will be delivering the cartel in person, will you not?
Yes.
Then let me come with you. I must see him once more. Just once.
Very well, Dorothea, very well. Can you be ready to start in the morning?
Of course.
Good. Then I'll ride in and order a chaise from the dogs.
And I must tell Narcissus and make arrangements for my absence. Narcissus, such news!
Oh, Dorothea, you quite alarmed me. I was immersed in my half-yearly report on the cellar, and I...
We have got a cartel of exchange for Monsieur Raoul, and I am going to Dartmoor with Endymion to deliver it.
A cartel, eh? So that's what you two have been up to. I thought there was something going on. But a cartel? Then he won't be coming back to Axeston, will he? I wonder...
Yes.
Well, of course, I wouldn't have asked if it had been just Endymion going, but as you're going along as well, would you mind taking my proofs with you?
Oh, Narcissus.
See, I've got them here all nicely done up. Perhaps he would just have time to scribble a few words to the printer. And I'm sure now that he's to be released, it would not be what Endymion would call indiscreet.
Very well, Narcissus. I'll do my best. Though it seems he's been very ill. He might not be strong enough to deal with anything just at present.
Ill? Oh, dear. Poor fellow.
Now, you will be good, won't you? And take your meals regularly.
My dear Dorothy, I'm perfectly capable of looking after myself for 2 or 3 days.
That night, after Dorothea and Endymion had gone to bed, it snowed. And the next morning, as they started for the west, they found the roads heavy. Beyond Chard, they grew worse. At Honiton, which they reached about midnight, it was snowing again, and the next morning they looked out on a world that was completely and forbiddingly white. The chaise ploughed on through Exeter to Moreton Hampstead, where they rested for another night. Before dawn, they were off again. Snow lay in thick drifts on the skirts of the great moor and whirled about them as the chaise climbed upwards. Day broke on a desert of howling whiteness without trees or gate or hedge. Eventually, Endymion touched Dorothea's hand and pointed out a mass of grey masonry looming up through the weather. The great war prison that held Raoul. A little before noon, they found themselves in the commandant's office.
Major Whiskers, my dear sir, this is indeed a... Oh, and Miss Whiskers.
Allow me to introduce my sister.
Delighted. Hello.
Dorothea. Major Salaby.
Good day, sir.
But what a journey, and in such weather.
My sister and I take a particular interest in this case.
Of course, of course. But you will be wanting luncheon at once.
No. Thank you, my dear sir. No, we wish to see our business accomplished as soon as may be possible.
By all means, entirely as you wish. You have the papers?
Indeed, yes. If you care to glance through them, I think you will find all as it should be.
Thank you. Yes. Then the roast meeting. Tomorrow we'll see him on his way to Plymouth, where he'll be put on board the first vessel for France.
You wrote that he had been ill.
Indeed, Miss Prescott. He was touch and go with him for 24 hours, but he's out of bed now and well on the mend.
May we see him?
Of course. He's been transferred to the convalescent ward. No doubt you and Miss Westcott prefer to break the good news to him in private.
That would be most considerate if it could be arranged.
I'll have him sent up to the consulting room. The doctor's finished his rounds. He'll be quite alone there. We'll step across at once, if you're kind of fond of him. From the gallery here, you look quite down into the convalescent ward. Your friend is below if you should have a peep at him.
No, I...
You prefer that he should be fetched at once. I understand. Excuse me a moment.
What a terrible place, Dorothea. The herding together of these men like cattle. Without privacy or personal belongings. Nothing.
Aren't you glad that we can save at least one who doesn't belong here?
Dawson, run down to the wall below and fetch up number 2672. Quick as you can, yes,
sir.
I know the number of each one of my children, and I never make a mistake.
I think my sister would prefer a word or two with Raoul alone.
Certainly. Will you step into the surgery, Miss Westcott?
Thank you.
Dawson will not take 2 minutes in fetching the prisoner, and perhaps, if you'll excuse us, a visit to the hospital itself will repay your brother.
Certainly, Major.
Hmm? Yes. Most instructive, I'm sure.
We are rather proud of our sanitation here. A glance over the arrangements, perhaps, Major Whisker.
Come in.
Number 2672 is outside now, ma'am.
Thank you. Will you please ask him to come in?
Yes, ma'am. 2672, forward march. Halt! Stand with attention. Prisoner number 2672, ma'am.
Thank you. You may leave us. And please close the door.
Yes, ma'am.
Dorothea.
Oh, how you have suffered, my love. How you have suffered.
But I am still alive, so you see things could have been worse.
Charles, you are to be released. You are free.
Free? Free. Oh, Dorothea. But how?
You are to be exchanged for one of our men in Briançon. Endymion arranged it. But listen, Charles, we haven't long alone together, and there's something I must say.
Hmm?
I've decided to come with you.
What?
I mean, I have decided to come back to France with you. As your wife.
Dorothea.
I understand that if the roads improve, you will be taken to Plymouth tomorrow and put on a ship for France. I've thought about this for weeks, and I want to go with you. My heart is where you are. I could not bear you to be away from me, free in your beloved Provence, while I was a prisoner in Bayfield.
But I thought you were content. I thought you had found your place in life, your music, your garden, your brothers.
That was so until you came. And then one day you asked me if I had never wanted babies of my own. Do you remember? Ever since then, I realize I have been dissatisfied with everything that used to mean most to me. Now I want only you.
But your brother, Endymion, he is with you?
Yes. But I have made up my mind to be frank with him. I had considered inventing some excuse. We have cousins near Plymouth whom I seldom see. I was going to ask if I could travel down there with you. And then you would have found a way to get me on board with you. But after all these years, I owe my brother frankness, if nothing else. It will not be easy, but I shall tell him the truth.
He will never let you go.
I think he will. Perhaps he wouldn't have done a few weeks ago, but things are different between us now. Charles, is anything wrong?
No, nothing. Do you mind if I sit down? I find I'm still not very strong.
Of course. How thoughtless of me, chattering on about myself and never thinking of you.
Thank you.
Charles?
Yes?
Something is the matter.
A funny thought crossed my mind when I was in the hospital. I thought, if he doesn't come soon, it will be too late.
If what doesn't come?
The cartel. It seemed to take such a long time.
Then you knew. But I thought Endymion gave the commandant strict instructions.
The commandant did not say a word.
But then how?
I knew you would find a way somehow.
Oh, no. It was Endymion's idea.
But unless you had confessed to him the reason for my being found under your window, that could not have been easy.
Indeed, it was not. Endymion laughed most cruelly at me. But then I made him see how bravely you had acted, and that while you had been foolish, you did not deserve this.
Well, well. So it was worth the risk after all. I began to wonder if there was something I had forgotten.
Risk? Oh, you mean the risk Endymion would not believe me?
I mean the risk of Zili's marksmanship on a rather dark night.
I don't understand.
Then I will explain. Zili and I had a little arrangement. Almost certainly promotion and Polly for him, and the chance of freedom for me.
Do you mean you asked him to shoot you?
That's right. While I was talking to you at your window, then in your hearing, I confessed to trying to escape. Sooner or later, they would bring me here, I knew. And when you found out what Dartmoor was like, I knew it would only be a matter of time before you told your brother the truth. The rest would follow. Obviously, they could not have me back in Exeter.
And with my rather delicate health, a return to France was the only possible course.
You used me. Charles, how could you?
To fight time, Dorothea, one has to use what weapons one can.
Whatever the cost.
Yes. I could not go on in that dreary captivity in Axister. Who knows how much longer this war might last? 5 years? 10 years? Another 6 months would have been too long for me. I had to do it.
And what of me? Didn't you think of me at all?
I thought of what you had said so often yourself. That if I were a free man tomorrow, it could make no difference to our position.
In other words, you discounted me entirely. You never gave a thought to my feelings, to the shame you would expose me to, the humiliation.
I thought of all those things. I even thought that perhaps it might lead to the scene we are having now. And I still did not think it was too high a price to pay for freedom.
Then I mean nothing to you.
On the contrary, you mean everything to me. Today you mean my liberty. Then you meant my happiness. I will never forget you, Dorothea. Or what you have done for me.
What a long and bitter lesson I've learned. But now I think I'm coming to the end of it. Endymion, whom you despise, has been right in every word he said. He mistrusted you from the first. And Polly. He saw that, too.
I tried to spare you that knowledge. But you must not think she has betrayed you in this other matter. She knew nothing of my arrangement with Zeely.
No fool like an old fool, they say. No old fool like an old maid. Yes, you were right about time. I hope it is never as cruel to you as it has been to me. Well, Endymion will be back at any moment, I imagine. He is inspecting the sanitation with the commandant. I hope your leg is not too painful.
Hardly at all now. The disability is, however, sufficient to ensure that I shall not be recalled for military service on my return.
You seem to have thought of everything.
Dorothea, I must make you understand. It was time made me do it. Time, the enemy of us all, in a thousand different ways. That is why I dare to hope you might understand and forgive me.
No, Charles. I can never forgive you. For what you have done to me, there can be no forgiveness, either on earth or in heaven. Perhaps one day you will see why.
Well, my dear, for my part, I can only hope I'm spared the annoyance of seeing that young man's face again. He's caused me an unconscionable amount of trouble, to say nothing of expense, and I doubt whether the least realization of it will ever cross his mind. However, did you conduct your interview with him to your satisfaction?
Yes, Endymion, we said all we had to say to each other. It did not take so very long after all. What? Endymion?
Oh, what, my dear, what?
We've forgotten our scissors drawings.
Huh?
See, here they are in the chaise still.
Oh, God bless my soul. Oh, dear. Oh, he will be upset.
However will we explain it?
I bless if I know, but you must admit, Dorothea, there is an humorous side to it.
The French Prisoner was written for radio by Brian Gere and based on the Westcotts by Sir Arthur Quiller Couch, with Rennie Ascherson as Dorothea Westcott, Dennis Hawthorne as Endymion Westcott, and Basil Jones as Narcissus Westcott. Others in the cast were Christopher Bidmead as Monsieur Raoul, June Barry as Polly, Norman Tittle, General Rochambeau, Best and Dawson, Geoffrey Wincott, the Commandant, Mudge and the Ostler, Brian Ralph, the young officer and Hawkins, Roy Brimble, Corporal Zealy. Duncan McIntyre was the narrator, and the play was produced by Michael Bowen from the South and West.